Welcome back to The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. Earlier, we heard new Governor John Carney's inaugural address delivered Tuesday at Legislative Hall. Wednesday, Carney got to work, signing his first executive order, creating a task force to look at replacing the state's Economic Development Office. Also this week, he offered a transition report he intends to help guide the first few months of his administration. So what did we learn from Carney's inaugural address and these first few moves of his administration about what to expect from this new governor? Our political reporter, James Dawson, is here to provide us some perspective. James, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be here, Tom.
Well, let's start with that inaugural address. It didn't offer any explicit indications of what the new governor might want to do, but some ideas and issues were clearly at the forefront of his thinking. What priorities did you glean from that address?
Well, it was basically a rehash of everything, even though it wasn't much that we heard from him on the campaign trail. So Carney's main focus has generally been on jobs and the economy, namely continuing to guide Delaware into becoming more of a science and tech and advanced manufacturing hub. And he says he wants to do that by expanding state help for small businesses, transforming Delaware's Economic Development Office, and better educating public school kids. So building on education, he mentioned reshaping the Department of Education into a support agency, and we still don't know what that's going to look like. He also specifically mentioned reaching into Wilmington neighborhoods with extra police patrols to help stem some of the heavy gun violence we've seen there in recent years. And we're recording this Friday morning. As of today, there have been 12 shootings with five left dead in the city since the beginning of the year, according to a News Journal database.
And he did mention Wilmington a couple of times in that speech, and specifically at one point, you know, kind of said if Wilmington's not right, you know, the state's going to have a larger problem. That's not necessarily new. People have said that for a long time, but he does seem to be particularly focused on what can be done to deal with some of these really intransigent issues in the city of Wilmington.
And he might have a better ally in new mayor Mike Perzicki, who maybe more so than Dennis Williams is amenable to having some state help come in, whether it's state police, which people in Wilmington seem to not be too excited about, or just straight up money to help pay for overtime patrols and things like that.
And that the overtime patrol money that was offered to Dennis Williams was
which he turned down
because he said it came with strings attached. That
right.
the legislators wanted to see the policing strategy. You know, how are officers being deployed? He did not want to give that level of information. Perhaps Mike Perzicki will be a little bit more amenable to doing that, to offering the things that this governor and the legislature wants to get that money, and I think that it was $200,000, right, last year, something along those lines, for overtime patrol specifically.
It could have been. I don't have that information off the top of my head.
But the other thing I thought was interesting in his speech was he did, as you mentioned, talk a little bit about the economy. He also talked a little bit about the budget. At one point did say there's nowhere left to kick the can on this budgetary road. Do you sense that he's a little bit more focused in trying to reach out to legislators to find some way to move this process forward on the budget specifically?
Well, he did give out a shout out to the Delaware Way and not working behind closed doors, just reaching across party lines. But he is going to work behind closed doors, which I was surprised that he included that part in his speech. And that's because he and leaders from all four caucuses, before he was inaugurated, said that they were going to revive these not secret, but private talks behind closed doors among themselves to work up this deal on a projected budget deficit for next year. And because of that, this situation is pretty nuanced. So Carney already has a pretty good working relationship with the General Assembly from when he was lieutenant governor from 2001 to 2009. But he's going to need this cross-party cooperation that's been strained for the past few years until Republicans gained enough seats in the Senate to challenge the Democrats' majority. They didn't really have too much of a say in what was going on.
And this could be kind of a marked difference from the Markell administration, which had oftentimes been criticized for the way it approached the General Assembly. He took, as I think we talked about before, more of a hands-off approach, and that led to maybe some tensions there. It would seem that John Carney, even I think at one point in his speech he said, I'll be around Legislative Hall walking around, that he maybe tends to be a little bit more hands-on with the legislature.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think he might be maybe more comfortable in doing that since he might have better existing relationships with them than Markell did when he came into office in 2009. But I thought it was interesting this week Carney was there at Legislative Hall, but his door was locked as compared to when Markell was in the building. His office door was always open, although you couldn't necessarily get inside the scheduler and his bodyguard in there.
It'll be interesting to see how that relationship develops over these, particularly these first couple of months. But it's talking to legislators. Any reaction to his speech in your conversations with them as they kind of looked at what was kind of laid out, what you know, in kind of broad strokes from the new governor?
Yeah, not really. Everyone I spoke to said that it was generally a positive speech, one that they agreed with on general terms for the most part. But like everyone else, they're just really waiting for specifics on all of these plans.
So Tuesday was all about ceremony. Wednesday, down to business. And John Carney started his administration with an executive order creating a task force to examine creating a public-private entity to handle economic development, perhaps replacing DDO or perhaps working alongside it. Tell us a little bit about this idea and exactly how it may or may not work, at least what we know right now.
Yeah, so this is something that the business community has been calling for about 6 months now. This executive order creates a task force to study whether or not the state should combine its money with private cash to lure businesses here. So Republican lawmakers who have been critical of DDO in the past are clapping. They flock to the signing ceremony. And even Democrats think that it's a pretty good step. Many in the General Assembly have said DDO is inefficient and has struck out on too many failed big deals rather than funneling this money to small and medium-sized businesses. And a report from the group is due in April, and Carney is hoping the General Assembly takes those recommendations and does something on them this year.
Carney did concede that one possible flaw in this idea would be having businesses having a say in handing out grants or tax credits to allies or denying them perhaps to competitors. How does he see diffusing that particular conflict or potential conflict?
Well, I specifically asked him about that, and he didn't have an answer. He just said that that's something the task force is going to have to figure out, and it's really tough to predict what they're going to come up with. It's a 14-person group. You have business interests with 4 seats, state lawmakers with 4 seats, you know, a couple other people sprinkled in there, and then labor, nonprofits, higher education and the public have 1 seat each.
It'll be interesting because, I mean, we've seen these type of entities before. I guess probably the one that most people know is the Riverfront Development Corporation. But that's a wholly different thing in turn. That takes state money and then uses it to, you know, has used it to help develop the riverfront. But it's a very different animal, I suppose, to have a group that might actually be making the decision on where money goes in terms of businesses. I mean, we often hear the criticism, particularly from Republicans, about picking winners and losers. Is it any different if you move that decision-making process from DDO, a government entity, to some that have private interests?
Yeah, and it just seems off the top of my head, I can't imagine that there would be some kind of group handing out this money, part of which would be from private businesses, and I don't think that they would do that unless they had representation on that group. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
It seems like a very logistically difficult thing. Perhaps this task force will come up with something that makes a little bit more sense. That's what it's there for. We'll probably find out sometime in April. The Carney administration also offered up a transition report with, I guess, about 100 recommendations he says he'll look at to guide his first few months in office. Anything stand out in that particular report?
There were a few. So a lot of them are holdovers from the Markell administration that he didn't either get to or was blocked by the General Assembly. The biggest one in my mind that will be discussed this year is creating a $15 million pilot program in all three counties for low-income students, which was a WEIC recommendation, Wilmington Education Improvement Commission. It would also cover English language learners, special education costs from kindergarten to third grade, which currently isn't available in Delaware. Only after fourth grade and above is that offered. So $15 million is a lot of money, obviously, when you're staring down a $350 million projected budget crunch. Of course, some of that money is taken up by new policy spending, but the bulk of it stems from this estimated deficit or mandatory spending increases. Another is reviewing the Coastal Zone Act regulations, which bans heavy industry along Delaware's waterways. So government officials say businesses want to buy up these polluted properties to clean them up and then, you know, later develop on themselves, but they can't under current law. And environmentalists aren't happy about any of these talks opening up the coastal zone, but the idea is getting play from both parties. So that'll be an interesting dynamic to see which one wins out. Others might be more of a reach. I saw two somewhat somewhat similar recommendations to reduce recidivism and prison populations by 5% a year, per year, just during the 4 years.
That's a high bar.
Yes, yes.
It'll be interesting to see how much of those things wind up being kind of fleshed out in actual legislation or policy initiatives from the governor's office in these first couple of months of his administration. While this week focused on the new governor, lawmakers were also at work this week. One notable piece of legislation worked on was involving a key revenue source, abandoned property. And this was an attempt to answer issues about Delaware's collection of abandoned property that have been challenged in court, correct?
Yeah, and this is something that people generally don't think about, partly because it's complicated and also because it can be a boring subject with a lot of numbers floating around. So we're talking, you mentioned it right there, key revenue source. It brought in more than $500 million to the state last year, and that's because we're talking about things like leftover gift cards, bank accounts, dormant stock that aren't being touched for years, and that reverts back to the state in which the businesses are incorporated. So controversially, Delaware officials have been auditing these companies to make sure they're paying what they should be, and these can reach as far back as 20 or 30 years in a business's history, and corporations just don't keep those kind of accounting records. So the state was estimating how much they should have been paying, and a federal judge said that could be considered unconstitutional. We don't know how that would have shaken out because the case was later settled out of court. So this bill would reduce those look-back periods to 10 years, and it will force companies to keep that or keep those records for those 10 years. And if they don't, then you can then estimate legally, at least under this bill,
and I guess also,
those kind of costs.
Also involved there would be the opportunity for companies, particularly, I guess, ones that are already in this process, to go into some kind of mediation type of operation.
Yes.
That helped, like the one that helped settle that other case to resolve some of these issues. So hopefully it would kind of clear the slate of all these issues.
That's what they're hoping.
Theoretically.
Right. But though that option is only open to people who have been under audit since around June, July 2015. I can't remember the exact date off the top of my head.
It is a fascinating yet complicated subject. The bottom line is the idea is to kind of create a very more reliable revenue source out of this abandoned property instead of one that has over the years kind of fluctuated from year to year.
That's the hope. And it will still be volatile. You know, we're still going to have those fluctuations, but it's going to be most likely a smaller dollar amount coming into the state, but it won't have these. I mean, you've seen these fluctuations in upwards of $100 million
right.
a year.
And that's troubling when you're trying to work out a budget each year. Usually when the legislative session gets started, James, we see some maybe more fairly significant issues tackled, things that lawmakers want to get done before the budget starts grabbing up attention. This year, though, we're not seeing a lot of these larger issue bills coming in. They're missing. What's up with that?
Well, I think this is the biggest story, and more so than the new governor even. Lawmakers are basically sewing their lips shut and holding back any controversial bills so they can't be blamed for what might happen during this upcoming special election that's going to decide control of the Senate. Right now, Democrats and Republicans are tied 10-10 after Bethany Hall Long was inaugurated from her Senate seat, and Republicans picked up another one in November. So we've been expecting a marijuana legalization bill at some point, handful of tax increases, and these are by far anything from being done deals, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we will see them eventually this year. And so far, when I've talked to people who are sponsoring them, they have their hands up in the air until after this has been decided.
They don't want to create a campaign issue that could change the way the Senate is set up. What do we know about the logistics of that special election? When are the wheels going to get turning on this?
Really not much. I mean, Senate Pro Tem David McBride has 10 days from when Hall Long was inaugurated to set the date. We should see that next week. It seems likely that they're going to use all the time that they can, which means we'll most likely see the special election date set sometime in March.
Interesting. And finally, Jack Markell's time in office now officially up. Though we did get confirmation this week, he will literally be riding off into the sunset, though not right away.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, he actually might be riding away from the sunset, if you think about it, directionally. So he's taken off on this cross-country cycling tour in June, starting in Oregon, heading east. And Markell has been an avid cyclist for years, really helped build Delaware's cycling profile into the third most bike-friendly state in the country by building these new trails and paths. And when I talk to him about it, it's something he's always wanted to do, but it's a huge time commitment. We're talking several months, especially on the training end, just to be able to propel yourself across those couple thousand miles. And, of course, it could be upended if he gets a new job. When I talked to him last week he said that he had no talks with outside companies, maybe just because he was still in office. So I wonder how many people were knocking down his door as soon as
Wednesday
Tuesday.
Morning. Yeah, Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday
yeah, Tuesday
morning.
afternoon, exactly.
Interesting stuff. James Dawson, thanks for dropping by. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And remember, you can keep up with all of James Dawson's coverage of politics here in the First State online anytime at DelawarePublic.org. And stay with us when the Green returns. We'll examine what a repeal of the Affordable Care Act could mean here in Delaware, which has run its marketplace in partnership with the feds. But first, your local news from Delaware Public Media.